Websites, social feeds, and YouTube videos don't need FDA approval, yet that's where millions of women are finding their healthcare information.
It's a paradox of our time, incredible access and incredible noise. So how do you navigate that? How do you reach your audience when misinformation can win the algorithm and truth needs to fight for attention? Welcome to Two Uteruses Walk Into a Bar, where we spill the sauce on brand strategies that win in women's health and femtech.
Welcome to the very first episode of Two Uteruses Walk Into a Bar. I'm Gabrielle Svenning.
And I'm Karen Flynn. We are so excited to kick this off. This series is our space to share real-world insights through smart, honest conversations about women's health marketing. Each episode, we'll sit down with strategists, storytellers, and leaders shaping how women's health brands show up and talk openly about what works, what doesn't, and what's changing.
And we're starting with a big one, misinformation. Social platforms have become the first stop for women looking for information. But with that access comes also the opportunity for confusion, half-truths, and bad advice, which can spread fast, especially in women's health.
That's the tension today's marketers are walking into, and the opportunity. How can femtech brands be part of the antidote and use the power of platforms to build credibility, grow their audience, and earn trust?
And that's what we're exploring today with Dr. C, known to millions online as the Vag Doc. She understands the power and the risk of influence in healthcare and what it really takes to earn trust when the algorithm is loud and the stakes are high.
But first, it is time to introduce our mocktail of the day. Today's mocktail is the Sparkling Carmen. It's equal parts lemonade and pineapple juice, and then topped with Sprite or with ginger ale. And garnish it with your choice of, I have an orange.
I have a lemon.
Gabrielle has a lemon. It's bright and it's bubbly and it's impossible to ignore.
Just like good conversation.
Yep.
So grab a stool, raise your glass. Let's get into it.
Let's get into it. Cheers.
Cheers.
If you have a vagina, I want to be your friend. Hi, I am the Vag Doc, otherwise known as your local OBGYN. Here we do women's health. We do things that you didn't learn when you were in health class. We do the crap that you are supposed to be taught in your doctor's visits when there's just not enough time. And I listen to what you don't know so that you can follow along here.
Our guest today is someone who sees real-world consequences of misinformation every single day. Dr. C, also known as the Vag Doc, is a practicing OBGYN and one of the most trusted medical voices educating women online with facts, humor, and absolutely zero nonsense.
She's built a massive following by doing something surprisingly rare, explaining women's health in a way that's evidence-based, approachable, and actually understandable. Dr. C, welcome to Two Uteruses Walk Into a Bar. We're so happy to have you.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
So glad you're here. Very excited.
Cheers.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So before we get into like our main discussion, our main focus and the chaos of the internet, we want to start with just talking about how you ended up getting on social media, becoming one of the most trusted voices, cutting through all the noise. You know, at what point did you realize, okay, I need to be part of this conversation, and what made you decide to show up online the way you do?
I think it's as much as me choosing to do this as the social media chose me when it came down to it. I was just kind of throwing things out there. I think everybody was, but I spoke what I know. And despite putting, you know, little videos of my kids or where I was up, I started throwing out women's information because it's like 90% of what my brain thinks about. And it just, you know, I'm educated in it. And then all of a sudden, everybody was resonating with it. And I started to realize nobody's talking to women like this. So I realized, okay, maybe they don't need to see me dance to Taylor Swift, but maybe I just need to kind of regurgitate some of the conversations I'm having every single day in the four walls of a room with a patient. And that's where it kind of started and seeded itself and took off. So I would say that they chose me more than I chose this, which is sort of fascinating because I'm playing catch up the whole way.
Yeah, I can see it. How did you choose? I mean, again, we haven't even gotten to the meat of it, but I'm curious, when you had that sort of light bulb moment, did you have a platform that you chose first? Was it because you were more comfortable with one over another?
You're going to laugh. Okay, so I did TikTok. mostly because I figured TikTok out and I could just boom, do the video, do a fast edit and do my thing. And the goal was, I said to the kids, we'll be like TikTok awesome. And maybe we'll, I don't know, sell something on TikTok. But there was significant value in the education. So my little joke with them, because we didn't tell my husband when I started this, was that I think that I just have to lean in to the education. Yeah. And I subsequently spoke to a friend of a friend of a friend who is kind of involved in some television spots on the news as a physician and things like that. And she was, you have something here, lean in and lean in hard. And I was like, oh, this is out of my wheelhouse, but I leaned in and here we are. So thus it goes.
Well, that is a great segue, this leaning in, because when we were talking about the prep, where we were prepping for this episode, and you talked about, and I've heard you say it online, that your goal is to be the health class for now. I found really interesting because, well, first of all, my health class, I think, pretty much glossed over the OBGYN stuff. I mean, we got the littlest of the little. Yeah. But I'm curious, in your day-to-day practice, where are the biggest gaps between what women think they know about their bodies and what's actually happening? And I guess, how does that play out online? How does this fuel the misinformation that we're seeing online?
I mean, what we know about our bodies is from health class, from when you were in seventh or eighth grade, and we chuckled and kind of ignored it, right? Because it was awkward and we were awkward. So we took very little away from it then. And it wasn't a ton that was given to us to begin with anyway. And when women go through their health, whether it's puberty, they're learning at the lunchroom table, or pregnancy, they're learning literally visit by visit because nobody's reading those long form books anymore, or they're talking to their girlfriends casually. And then it just kind of keeps going from there. There's gaps in every single developmental part of our female existence. I'm not shy. I talk about all of the words that people blush at every day. So it was very easy to see that once somebody was willing to say those bashful words, like medically and clinically, people were like, I get that. Or if I use those clinical and big, silly words that people laugh at, all of a sudden, I could translate it in a way that it didn't seem so daunting. And there is a gap at every single developmental stage, from literally birth until death.
Yeah. And I can see too, as we're talking, I'm thinking through that if a woman doesn't understand or really have a dial on what is happening, may not have the right name, the search is going that she does online is going to be fraught with error, or it may lead her in the wrong place because she doesn't even really have the full picture. So once you get into an algorithm with misinformation, it almost just starts feeding it back to you. It's trained on what your query is. So I think it's really interesting that there's that sort of context of the more information we can give women about what they're experiencing, the more educated and savvy they'll be in the way that they go about looking for information online.
I think what's also interesting is, you know, you've maybe seen those mugs at an office somewhere where it says your Google search does not equal my medical degree. Yeah. And in a lot of ways that's true, but in a lot of ways that's changing, because if you think about a lot of the search engines, a lot of them are based on where people place ad money and what's going to come up. And it's not always going to hit in the most clinically evidence-based way.
Right.
And I'm not saying that social media functions very differently, but I think that once people find somebody that they trust, that is then what's feeding them and kind of educating them forward. So once they hit a trust lane with somebody, that's where their search is going to lead them. And it's not just going to be to one particular person or provider, let's say, but it could be providers that person likes. So like me, I'm in a little network of physicians that I think are doing a decent job educating. So I think that some of the people that follow me are then getting siphoned to other, hopefully, trustworthy individuals.
I think that makes sense. I mean, that's the way real life works, right? Our social networks work. And you would talk to your doctor and your doctor would refer you to somebody else. A friend would refer you to somebody else. And I think that's, to me, that's kind of like the, you know, the upside of social media, the best of what it can do.
What's interesting, if you... Speaking on how people start, I think it's very much, you'll see different generational moves. So you'll see that women that are a little bit more seasoned, you know, not so green, they won't talk to their girlfriends. We were all just taught to suck it up, buttercup. And until you get to that doctor's appointment in 6 months, you're sitting on your problem, whatever it might be. And then the younger girls are getting all the crap information from their girlfriends at lunch via maybe some less trustworthy avenues online and social media that they found. So there's a big dichotomy in specifically age-specific searching for real valuable content and information.
Oh, interesting. So I understand what you're saying about people's approach to it, or how much they're willing to sit on something before they go for help or to talk about it with somebody. It's interesting that their searching is also based on what generation they are, or what their experiences were.
Yeah, but I will say, I think talking to a lot of women's issues like midlife and beyond, I'm impressed by how many women are interacting in that age group with me there. I expect the younger girls, and they're there and they show up. But when I have the 50, 60, 70-year-old women chiming in and declaring their age, I'm like, yes, there they are. But they're the forerunners in searching on certain social medias right now. But they're bringing their friends in, because my mom is on. Now her girlfriends are watching me every day, and they're like octogenarians, and it's awesome. I'm like, hey, what do you need to know today?
I think that there are a lot of people my age anyway who are there. We might be lurking. We might not be making our voices
over
heard.
For sure. Yeah. And getting a voice and not sitting on it as long. Because my career in the office has been, I've had this for 6 months. And I'm like, why did you wait 6 months? And now I have patients that are like, I saw your video and you said I'm supposed to be here. And I'm like, great.
Wow. Well, that's
awesome. That's
it
awesome.
It is. That's a good thing.
That is awesome. I know there's a whole cohort of people that are for the over 50 crowd. When you're making your content too, as soon as it gets into certain kind of age demographic. What's so interesting is that your content resonates across the whole spectrum. I love it. How many creators can say that they are so relevant to the whole lifespan of a person?
That's why I chose my field, because I have the grandmoms, the moms, and the grandkids all at the same visit within an hour. And that's what makes women's health super fun, because you're much more bonded as a woman to go through something like that together. But, you know, I will talk about the late life issues, like the lichen sclerosis, itchy vaginas. But then I get such traffic on something like, how do you put in a tampon the first time?
Sure.
You know,
really
swing the gamut.
I wonder, I'm curious, I'm getting a little off our script of questions, but have you been able to figure out globally how far you're resonating, like reaching? Obviously, you are global, but are you finding that different regions of the world are responding more?
Yeah. You know, you get the demographics that are built into the sites. I can see which countries I hit a lot of traffic on. I think English speaking is just naturally where I'm headed. So a lot of Europe, a lot of Australia, a lot of South Africa and Africa, interestingly. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I, for instance, I'm going on a trip to Korea in 4 days because they want me to do outreach with an organic pad company. So I'm flying to Korea on Saturday to go do that.
That's awesome. Can you talk a little bit about that partnership, and without just kind of curious what it looks like in actuality? Because that is, as we talk and through subsequent episodes of this podcast, we're going to be speaking to marketers of and founders of brands. And one of the topics is, how do you get your message out? Who do you partner with?
Yeah.
I'm just curious how that happened with you.
Absolutely. So look, I went into this very specific once I realized it was a thing. And my biggest concern was, I have a medical license that is my priority. So that comes first. Well, my family, then my medical license. So I said early on, I wouldn't do anything online that I couldn't stand by in a room with my partners and peers and say that I did, or anything that would jeopardize the career that I've, you know, spent 20 years building. So I don't take everything that's offered. And the thing that becomes very evident with creators is, very early on, you get thrown everything. I mean, if there is a supplement or a hokey pokey medical device, I have been offered it to speak to, but I wouldn't give it to my patients who I would see every year. So I'm not going to recommend it here. So I personally have a certain threshold for who I'm going to partner with. And I make sure They have to send me the research. I mean, I'm willing to talk to anybody. I have to like and believe what I'm going to talk about, but they sent me research. They sent me their ingredients. This particular company, which is an organic cotton pad company, sent me all their certifications, and some of them are really hard to get. I looked up the certifications and they're all legit. So I had to do my due diligence to see, right, is this something that is real? Is it reputable? Is it certified? What information do they have? And is it something that in 5 years I'm going to stand next to and say, that was not a smart choice? Or is it going to be, okay, yeah, I like that product, mm-hmm, still. And that's, mm-hmm, important to me before I venture. So I probably say no to 97% of the things that come my way, mm-hmm, because this is not my career. I'm very specific to say that I have a very valid and valuable career to me personally. Mm-hmm. So to put that value in another company, I have to know that they believe in it and that they've studied and evaluated it to a place that feels authentic and helpful.
That aligns so well with the whole reason why you're even on social media, mm-hmm, which was having these important conversations, and which actually segs into the topic for today, so we can, yeah, make us all wrap, yeah, up about misinformation. I mean, mm-hmm, we were talking about that. And one of the things that sparked this whole project for us was reading about how studies were proving that misinformation was traveling faster than truth, you know, especially, mm-hmm, women's health. From your vantage point as a doctor and someone who is listening and talking, what kinds of mis or half-truths tend to take off the quickest for women's health that are you, or if you were able to,
yeah, you know, and can you women's quick, health is tough,
yeah,
yeah, it
and
is.
And why do you think they get latched onto so easily?
I think it's a lot of whisper down the lane. I mean, obstetrics is a landmine of misinformation, yeah, and like that old penchant, if you do something good, one person will tell you their story, but if something bad happens, they're going to tell 10.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of also goes with the value of what you're telling. And I think that the reason the misinformation is easier to chew is because it's delivered in a way that translates in a more understandable way. And it sounds a little bit more maybe interesting or fascinating. And therefore, somebody can feel something about that, latch onto it, and know how to communicate it forward. Whereas sometimes the evidence-based stuff is a little bit denser. It is. Yeah. And because of that density, it's not always the interesting, sexy story to tell, but there's value in it. So what I think is that where we mess up and let misinformation take off is because it's just a more easily translated tale. Whereas the authentic stuff, you have to really think about how you're going to communicate it in a way that everybody understands. And if you can have a 10-year-old understand it at the end, then you probably hit the sweet spot where the misinformation is, that somebody is going to navigate it forward in a positive way.
Very well said. I got,
yeah,
that.
Yeah. 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 Okay. And so interesting too, as we talk about what half truths and things and the prevalence and how fast they spread, it makes me think of wives' tales, like the just going back in the history of storytelling and how we share things and pass down from one woman to another into their family. And it's like a game of telephone. And yes, something like putting garlic up your vagina, you know, may have sounded legit 60 years ago or something. And I think that we trust, right? We trust the people that are giving us advice, particularly, yes, if it's family and friends. And the world of OBGYN, that world, because it's been hush hush, right? And quiet, it's like misinformation feeds in secrecy. And
yeah, I think that I always think about obstetrics and gynecology, like all of our lady parts are on the inside, basically, yeah, except for, you know, our chest. And therefore, it's very easy to misunderstand because a woman can't see or feel or examine what's going on herself. And we're told what's happening to us without totally understanding,
right,
the inner workings of it, because, yeah, we are complicated. And that's a good, yeah, thing, but we are super complicated. And we've been paternalistically told what's going on for so long and what we have to do. And that's hard to swallow when we want to be fierce, independent women in, you know, the 2025 plus, you know, years.
Yeah.
So I think that what we've lost in that time frame is that we really have to educate better, but educate somebody where they are. And that's different for every single human being.
That actually is a really good for the next question I have, which is, you know, when you think about the social media platforms that are out there, and I know you're on TikTok and Instagram, those are your chosen platforms, correct? Regardless, they reward relatability, speed, and storytelling, which are three things that the healthcare community is not necessarily rooted around, or they don't hold those mm-hmm. tenets. So what do they need to understand about how women are consuming information now? What do they just need to get over or really embody in order to make sure that their messages are heard?
So I think that all relationships are trust. And somebody that chooses to follow somebody like me, they're going to see me a handful of times or more. So they're going to have a basis of, okay, she said something, I believe it. She said something, I looked at it, it's legit. And that trust is the basis for all of it. But how do we build trust quickly? Okay. You know, yeah. I walk into a room with a patient and I have to figure out how to gain trust to hear so that they hear me and hopefully get the best care that they can get in their visit, which is obviously very short in today's modern medical world.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's not so different here. I'm, you know, presenting myself, but the benefit is that I'm cycling over and over again. So I think I almost gain more trust in a social media capacity than you can in the office sometimes, because I might not see somebody for a year in the office, or if they're pregnant, I might see them back to back for a few months. And that helps a little bit with establishing trust. But on social media, if you can be a trustworthy kind of companion in the story of what your medical questions are, that's a good thing. And I keep coming up and showing myself to you to be trustworthy, that you can take what I'm saying, look it up, and it's real, or talked about it with your friends and they're like, oh, I've gone through what she's talking about too. That's it. It's establishing the relationship that you trust somebody. And I think that when I think about how things were presented to me as a med student, we were supposed to go in very formal. Hello, Mr. So-and-so, I'm Dr. So. I never did that. It was never my style, which is why maybe I do this as I do here. Mm-hmm. And it's worked for me. And if somebody wants somebody very formal, they're going to see somebody else. Right. And that's totally fine. I mean, right. I call myself the vag doc. So yeah. You kind of know what you're getting from beat number one. But I think that it's an interesting relationship that I never really envision, but I think that the healthcare physicians and nurse practitioners and so forth that are doing good work are the ones that you are seeing create trust in the kind of relationship you would want to have at lunch with somebody, which lunch for me is a dangerous zone because my girlfriends come with their questions, and that's fine. Yeah. And that's not so different than what I'm doing here. There's nothing off topic and nothing you have to hold back. And that is a little freeing. You have a little cloak in front of you so you can ask your questions and you can listen from afar. Right. But they're seeing a lot of me because I think that's what's happening, and good for them. And I guess good for the education getting out there that we're building a foundation of believability. And I'm not a paid actor. I'm not somebody that's giving a unique one person testimonial. I'm the one that sees all these women with similar things and can speak to a large cohort in my day to day and then bring it to the masses with experience.
Right.
But this is something I think everybody can keep in mind. You're building trust, but you're also building familiarity by popping up a lot, as you said. When I was just thinking, as you were talking, I was like, that's very true, because you really don't get to see, for instance, your doctor as often as you'd like if you like your doctor.
Yeah.
But the more you see somebody that you trust on social media, the more that you feel like you really get to know them. Mm-hmm. You become more familiar, more comfortable, more trusting, more willing to listen to what that person is saying as well. And I think that that is a really powerful tool. I think it's a really powerful extension of your brick and mortar practice, so to speak, too, you know, where you're reaching.
I have incredible partners. And when I was a very young baby doc, one person said to me, if you have trust, you'll never have a problem. Mm-hmm. Because even when the unexpected shows up, you have the relationship that you can navigate it with that person together. And that's how I've dealt with my patients. You know, it's not a direct one-to-one here, but I think that I've inadvertently created a relationship between me and whoever's watching me.
Sure.
Which is a good thing. And again, I stand by the things that I say. And therefore, I think that they see at least what I hope is the authentic information behind it.
I would think a lot of the content for you that goes viral comes straight from like patient encounters. I think you've talked about this. Moments where you realize, wow, no one ever taught them this. So two questions. One, I don't know if you have an anecdote that you could share, and if you don't, you can't, totally fine. But also, what kinds of misunderstandings or questions are you seeing often enough that you think people who are femtech marketers and founders really need to know about, like stuff that you're just seeing regularly enough, regularly enough?
So I could give you so many, from anything from somebody saying to me, why does my underwear turn white when I wear it often down there? And it has to do with a pH thing down below, to women who think that every single pelvic exam equals a pap smear, but that's not necessarily true.
Right.
And these are just little conversations, not even big ones, like the little nuance that I'm like, you know, it's something I wouldn't even think twice about, but they ask me, which means other people are thinking it. And then as far as, I will tell you, there is so much crazy misinformation and hysteria around female medical procedures, especially today, because women are expected to tolerate a lot of discomfort, and we are supposed to just handle it and do things without a lot of care and anesthetic or analgesia that we would not expect others to go through in other types of procedures. So a lot of people think that we OBGYNs, who were trained that way, mind you, are barbaric, and we don't care for the woman enough. We just want to do the procedure, and there's a lot of really important procedures that we do, and I think every day we're getting better and better at communicating how we're going to do them with their care and comfort in mind, as opposed to not preparing somebody for a procedure and just doing it, you know? And that's everything from doing a biopsy in the office to deciding if you're going to do a hysteroscope in the operating room and what that means personally to somebody who's going to go through the experience. Because remember, medicine is not just the diagnosis and the investigation. People go through an experience, and we always hear people chit chat now about their medical trauma. And that's a lot of hysteria that's chit chatted on and misconstrued and really scares the something out of people. So the goal is to go through these things and try to reduce the concern of the trauma and hopefully alleviate it, because that's what keeps a lot of people not doing things that are either medically necessary or would be really, really good for them, is that they're terrified that they're going to have some sort of crazy trauma just like their friend did. And again, all of our stuff is on the inside, and we've just had to handle it for so long, but we're doing things differently every day, and the field is much more female heavy. No offense to the guys out there, but we have different perspectives going into each and everything that we're doing. But people are very, very scared of procedures and pain thresholds, and that we're chopping things off and doing barbaric things without a lot of care and consideration to what your experience is when you leave.
Yeah, that is so interesting too. What you're bringing up is there's this gap even between what the health community would think people would want to talk about or do want to talk about, and what the patients really want to talk about. Because, you know, you're coming in, I'm speaking generally, but the field is coming in to treat, we need to fix, and, you know, and there's a diagnosis and then a protocol. There's so much that goes in between all of that, from explaining what the diagnosis is to the procedure to why this treatment over another treatment. There's so many questions that come out. And I think that there's probably an assumption, given the amount of time that appointments are, and just, you know, as a professional coming in, seeing a problem, it would be very easy, I would think, for a lot of things to go unsaid that are super important. And,
you know, one of the areas that I think is the trickiest, I'll give you a for instance, we do pap smears, we check for HPV, we get a lot of abnormal paps, because most women, either they themselves have had an abnormal pap, or reach your arm one direction and that person's had an abnormal pap, and they've had to go through procedures for it. And everybody thinks they have cervical cancer. Everybody thinks that we're cutting parts of them off. And it's very hard to undo the emotional response they have to this information in a timely fashion that makes them convinced that they're not dying of something horrible. Because I have to remember that just like trust is an emotion that breeds an emotion, a lot of the things that I tell a patient make them feel something. And that feeling often supersedes what is factually going on. And they're not wrong. They're just scared because this is not their language. This is not their wheelhouse. So you have to accept the fact that, yes, I want to give you fact, but I have to understand that you're having an emotional response in that time frame that I have to navigate with.
Yeah.
And you've probably talked to somebody that's had like a cancer diagnosis. And I always say, you got to come with a friend. You hear the word cancer and you stop and you hear nothing else. And then I'm like, here's my number, because you're probably going to have no idea what I just said. Or I do the whole conversation a second time because I know they heard nothing.
Yeah.
And it's and that's the type of navigating that has to be done. And it still has to be done quickly, because
I was going to say almost, you know, real time, actually. Oh,
so how do you address that? That's a really good point, because
yeah,
everything is going to have two sides to it in this particular business, mm-hmm. in this field, in this area. You've got the clinical and the medical, and you're going to absolutely have the emotional that goes along right. with it. And it's all personal. Everybody's going to bring their own experiences as well to it. So what do you address first? Do you do it, you know, try to do it simultaneously? Do you set it up so that people calm down before they hear the information? What do you,
yeah,
have you learned?
People don't want to wait for the actual fact. So yeah. What I'll tell you is, again, once upon a time, I was trained, if I got a cancer diagnosis on a Friday, tell them on a Monday, let them have one more good weekend. Who was I to decide that they needed three extra days for what is their new reality, right? But that's what I was taught a long time ago, but I don't do that anymore. And you have to realize that medical information gets released to patients quickly, so they get this kind of stuff.
Oh, you're right.
And what I'll say is, I walk in with whatever news is there, and I just factually tell them, you have endometrial cancer. Okay. It is in this area, and this is what we have found. And then I pause and I see the eyes, and you have to read the room and the face, and you have to know what you're going in with. When I communicate with people, sometimes there's an educational gap. Sometimes there's a language barrier. Sometimes I just have total emotional breakdowns, and each one, you got to kind of take a moment and decide what's the best way to navigate around this. And some people are not prepared to hear everything right up front. And then I go through, I say, do you want to hear these steps? Are we scheduling you to come back? Are we calling anybody? And sometimes the answer is no, I'm good. And then I'm talking to them 2 hours later on the phone from the first stop, which is okay. I mean, who am I to say that they shouldn't be freaking out when they hear that word?
People go into auto mode, I think, it's, you know.
It's like everything goes white and they hear nothing. But I respect that fact. And I think that I wouldn't say I pride myself in it, but when I go into a room, my goal is communicate what has to be said in a way that they can then take it and exactly communicate it forward.
Yeah.
Okay. And again, that's different for everybody. Like my father went through pancreatic stuff last year. I'm a board certified medical doctor, and the pancreas is not my jam. Okay. But I did not need to be spoken to like I was a PhD in pancreas. I needed her to bring it down to, that's outside of my lane. Yes, I know more than the average person, but I'm also emotionally responding to what you're telling me about my dad, right?
Yeah.
So I can't be talked to as an expert, even though I'm an equal expert professionally. It's not my wheelhouse. You have to bring it down so that I can chew it up and then communicate it to my mother and my sisters and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas when we're talking about what I communicate for it, I have to look in the room and say, okay, can you take what I just said and tell it to all of the family members that are going to ask you 15 questions in an effective way that makes sense to you and to them? And that's just a style that I have to go with so that I know that they're leaving with the value of the information.
You're a natural teacher. All of this is exactly how
I had two teachers for parents, but thank you.
Yeah. But that's exactly, you want people to be able to say it back to you before
yeah.
they leave. So let's pull this now over to your social media role, right? Mm-hmm. And you're very clear that you're evidence-based, but mm-hmm. you're not woo-woo. I think you've said on some, I've seen you say. So how do you personally walk that line between being credible, giving good guidance, giving people this information that in capsules that they can take and use, but also being like casual and funnily and accessible in a way that is building that trust and that relationship with your audience? How do you do that?
Yeah. So I think that what I have to realize is I can't combat everything on social media. Nobody can. It's a bigger moving target than anybody can really handle. But I see a lot of themes in the comments that come through to me and the questions that come through to me. So I try to target on those things. I mean, I have a really good basis of education and experience to speak from. I also know I don't know everything, but I also know how to find information that's valuable. So I go back to the literature and the research via certain very specific search engines that only pull from research. Mm-hmm. I've kind of settled a long time ago with UpToDate, but I use a lot of Open Evidence now because it's nice and fun and on my phone, and it pulls the research articles if I want to navigate back and forth to them, so that even if I'm hitting up a topic, I make sure that I'm encompassing not just what I remember, because my memory is not perfect, but that I hit A, B, C, and D, and maybe I would have left D out if I didn't go back to the original content and information that is there. So I'm not Google searching, sorry. But I am going to the literature that exists in those topics. And there's a lot of feedback that people will post their woo-woo in my threads. And I have to just take a deep breath and I don't respond. In the beginning, I was trying to delete all the horrendous comments that were totally inaccurate. And I've started to respond to them more and just be like, look, you know, you can look this up. This is what's real. Mm-hmm. And you also have to realize there's bots out there. And these bots are a real deal part of technology. And there's nothing like a bot to respond to a herpes post, because, man, they just come out of the woodwork and they all look the same. They have a certain look and appearance, but you can't hit up 1,000 bots on one post. So you just keep going and you put out the value in what I say. And if I see something in the comments and the responses that people are gravitating to and it seems really off, I will kind of poke my head in and be like, well, you could also consider looking here for a different thought process. But I stay in a lane that is inclusive. I'm not going to rip anybody a new one. Sorry if that's inappropriate to say, okay? Totally, because I want people coming back for consistent education,
right,
over a fight. You know, I'm not here to prove that you're wrong within like the last thing that I do, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm here to keep producing trustworthy information.
I want to go back to language for a minute, because as we've talked so far in this conversation, we've, you know, acknowledged that you are talking to a broad scope of women or a range of women, all ages. And you've said that, and you've sort of alluded to the fact that even as a doctor yourself, when you're receiving information that perhaps is out of your field, you need it maybe delivered in a little, you know, don't speak to me as a pancreatic doctor or pancreatic doctor. That's not me. Talk to me in eighth grade language. So you've mentioned that you have three ways of talking about things, or you generally have a structure of like formal eighth grade version and then maybe a fourth grade version. How do brands, and I know that when we're talking about your content, there's the Vag Doc and what you're saying, and then there's also the brands that you're going to partner with in the situation of the like 1% or whatever 5% of brands and opportunities you have that you decide to take. What do they need to know, the brands themselves, about the language that you use? Where does that intersection come between what they want to say and all of the, you know, things that they're supposed to say, the caveats, and then balancing that with the information? How do you advise potential brands and partners about that and how they approach the language?
So I think that there's nothing like an analogy to get somebody on the train of understanding. And when I speak with somebody, if I see that it looks like that they just did not get what I'm saying, you got to restart, start over, start from the beginning and bring it in a different angle. And we all talk about learners. Some people are visual, some people are auditory. I really find that an analogy kind of hits a lot of it, because analogies are often so visual when you hear them, because they're comparing them to something that you very much understand in day to day, and medical is not day to day. So if you can verbally communicate an analogy in what's going on, you do a lot better. Like when I talk about abnormal bleeding, I tell them, look, your inside of your uterus is like a weed fest, and it's not cleaning itself out. Nobody has been in there to weed whack for a while. Mm. And now we're at risk of those weeds turning into something like a disaster, like bamboo shoots that are growing, you know, and they're not native and they're going to take over, or something silly like So people understand things that they interact with every day, but they don't understand their body that way. And that, I think, really overlaps nicely. So if you can make it an, and you don't see communication in a medical format in an analogy. I don't see it from the reps that come in. Right. It's not present in the literature. It's not present on the commercials that you see on television. I find that they're very, very formal. And then once they go, and they have to have their disclaimers. I'm not knocking it. Yeah. But once they go into disclaimer land, it is way wordy and way confusing. And I understand that there's regulations that are part of that. So you have to hit the message fast and in a way that resonates. And again, it's an analogy. I can give you an analogy on just about every part of women's health.
The art of the analogy. That's very important. And I think it's probably undervalued for how impactful it can be, because it immediately takes something, as you just said perfectly, familiar.
You're right. People ask me, why do I have dense breasts and have to do all this extra stuff? I'm like, some people's breasts are like a clear glass window and you can see everything through them. Mm-hmm. And some people, it's like a cloud and a fog start to roll in and you can't see, but all that stuff is still behind the cloud. And because I can't see through the cloud, I have to do all these other pictures. And they're like, oh, density means I have like a cloudy breast. I'm like, exactly. And is that really what it means? No. But it's the way that the pictures pick it up. And if you look up these things, now they understand. It's not that my breast feels hard. It's that the picture has a haze over it.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, now I get it. They're not going to see my problem unless I do this other thing that my doctor told me to do.
That's really interesting.
The wheels of my brain are going right now as far as
you're digesting now. You're like, I get breast density.
I get breast density, but I love the analogy thing. And it's, I think that's all, you know, potentially always a challenge for brands to think about because they are very careful.
That's the translation.
But it is perfect for teaching. It's absolutely.
It is. Yeah. If you're going to do this job well, you are going to be an artist in translation. And I don't speak a lot of languages. Okay. Right. But I know how to speak visually enough and in ways that people can reference other experiences to then connect what they have to understand. Mm-hmm. And that's the tricky thing is, are you a good translator for the stuff that, like, if I'm speaking to my partner, it sounds like mumbo jumbo, like somebody's reading the dictionary. He understands what I'm saying. I understand it. But the poor person who's living it is left in the lurch.
Yeah. A lot of companies want to be partnering with creators like yourselves. They're not sure how to do that responsibly. So we talked before about how what you look at when you're considering partnering with a brand. What should brands, in your opinion, from your perspective, what should brands be doing when they're looking to partner with a health influencer?
I think that they should look for somebody who is consistent, and it doesn't have to be on one topic. But if you see that there's somebody that's consistently giving valid information, consistently trying to put good education out there, I feel a certain way when I see somebody hawking something every 5 minutes, because maybe that is their career now. And look, influencers, this can be their career. It's a beautiful way. And it is truly the future of connecting and educating. But there's certain times that you see certain creators and you're like, why did you make that decision? Because your peers are looking that maybe that wasn't the most valid decision for the patients that you would be treating otherwise. Right. So if you don't want to be in the company of who they are also branding themselves with, you know, then you want to navigate in a different direction. And I don't know if I had mentioned this with you. I work with not a management group, but they kind of run things through with me and they take everything that I get. I give it to them to look at because they run it through an ethics board.
Oh, cool.
And the Sunshine Act and everything else, because I have to legit be, again, aware that I told you protecting my family first, but my license second. Yeah. And again, that's hugely important to me. So I like that that's how this particular group works on the side for me to make sure that it hits that. Now, I'll tell you, for a very long time, and I don't take a lot, but nothing was coming in. And there was a few different reasons that I think nobody wanted to connect with me. One is that I refer to myself as the Vag Doc. And I'm like, what? People are connecting with the name. It's what I do. We're here to talk about weird things. So if they can't navigate that this is the way that we are communicating today and we're all comfortable with it, that's okay. And then I personally haven't blasted my own credentials and name out there yet, because again, I go back to number one, I was kind of separating my family from all of this a little bit, but that's my personal choice. There are a multitude of incredible physicians and providers that are putting their names and credentials next to everything. And I totally respect them for that. I just haven't made that personal decision yet. And maybe it makes my pool a little bit smaller, but I'm comfortable, you know, because again, I'm here to educate and everything has to align with what my core values are.
I think that's really important too, about sort of the onus on the brand. When, I mean, you're very transparent. If they look at your content, they're going to see your tone. They're going to see your approach. I think that it's up to them to decide whether they can work with that, because clearly you've got the following. They don't. So there's a bit of ceding a bit of control, which isn't necessarily a strength of the brands themselves because they have so much to protect. So do you have any advice for brands and the marketers behind them about how they approach creators like you, or how they consider the opportunities? What sort of advice would you give them sort of to do so, to go about doing so?
I've navigated this in a few different ways because, again, you look at my page, I'm very casual, and that's my intent because, again, it's my communication style and it's what's effective.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm in my pajamas. Sometimes I'm post-call in my scrubs. So you're getting me in a way that a lot of people see me, which is not put together, in my work clothes at the end of the day, laying on the couch, okay? Mm-hmm. When I go into patient rooms, I don't sit in the chair. I jump up on the counter and I'm sitting there. And that's, again, that's just my style. So if you're gonna look at somebody, you have to understand their communication style, because you can look at a lot of marketing that's done in the medical lane and it looks very similar, right? Mm-hmm. It all has a stylistic look, right? The same animations, the same sort of voice in the background. It's no fault to the people that are making it. That's what they're being told to make.
Right.
I've had people come and really want to regulate how I give the message. And I had to put my head in the right space and say, you came to me because I'm effective at messaging. So we're going to have to sort of come back to the fact that I want to hit your points, but I have to translate it for you because you're not translating it effectively. And that's my style.
Yes.
And that's okay. But I've had some people want very intense control over how many words are popping up and all of the things. And look, I'm not a producer and an editor. I'm me. And a lot of the formatting of these things are also on the onus of the creator, right?
Yes.
So I'm not paying an editor. You're seeing a shop of one, which is amazing. And I'm learning so much, but it's no Steven Spielberg here. So I don't want it to look like that. My goal is to still communicate effectively. And people are connecting with my words. They don't really care if I have makeup or hair or what color scrubs I wear.
Right.
It's the translation. And that's where I think that control has to let go a little bit. If you're looking at a certain voice, you should expect to get something that sounds like that voice.
You're buying the voice, so to speak. When I say buying, I mean, when they come to you, this is your brand.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's very interesting too. There's going to be some interesting dynamics as this grows.
And you'll see in creators that are following a hardcore script, you can tell because they look one way here and another way there. Yeah. And then you're like, they were really scripted. I did a package at some point and they kept adding language and language and language. And once they added all this language, they were like, it looks like an ad. And I was like, yes, it does. I'm glad we agree because I think it looks like you came for one thing and you got all the little edits that you wanted, but it's a very different look. And I don't think it hits as hard with the people that you want to connect with.
So we've been using the teacher language a little bit. Mm-hmm. Why do you grade your experience? This is completely off script, but your experience doing this, how would you grade it from your point of view as far as your personal experience, enjoyment, whatever, and how well you think it's been effective countering misinformation and just spreading good information around?
I'm endlessly impressed by the fact that people want to listen to me. And that, look, I told you I don't blast my credentials everywhere, but trust is there that they trust in what I'm saying, regardless of the fact that I haven't put my actual like legit credentials up, which are real. And I communicated them to you the first time that we connected because I was like, look, this is really me. Navigating that was a little scary in the beginning on how I wanted to handle it. I had to kind of grow a little bit of a skin because then you have some people that write some nice things, some not nice things. And you just got to kind of take that, like the good comes with the bad. But I personally, I like teaching people and I like that they're getting value out of it that's helpful to them. And they're not my patients coming in, although a lot of my patients have found me. They're going and they're advocating for themselves, which is the best thing I could ask, is that they took something, they advocated, and then they write back, I am better today than I was before. And that's amazing in this whole thing. But, you know, there's a learning curve for all of us, the people that are watching me, how I communicate with them and what comes of it. I enjoy it. I took like a swerve left and I don't know how I got here. But nonetheless, it feels nice to be putting something real and I think helpful out there. And that's really where this all stemmed from. I mean, I never thought I would be talking to anybody in marketing because I got a big goose egg worth of education in that. And I get to really have new experiences that I think help me help others. And that's really the punchline. But what's really been great for the people that I talk to doing this, I have had to do deep dives into so much more medicine since I started, because again, I'm representing myself in a way that's copy and pasted outside of my control. So I don't want to say something that I feel uncomfortable to stand next to in 5 years.
Yeah.
So I am doing additional checks and education and reading and learning, because I may already know all the stuff, but I want to make sure that if I'm going to say it, I'm saying it truthfully and in its entirety.
And you're becoming pretty recognizable now. You've got a good following. How have your colleagues responded? Have they like, way to go, or oh, I saw you again, you know, like,
I mean, it's funny, like I
or do they think you're crazy too? I think like that would a bit, it's a bit, it feels
they know her.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, the nurses found me first, and the nurses, there's no filter. They come to me, my nurses that I work with, they're like, wait, just, oh, you know, like, and I'm like, fine, then what do you want me to talk about next? If you're going to be watching, I might as well hit something up that's interesting. I remember the first time one of the NICU doctors, I saw that she friended me, and I was like, oh, it's out, you know, here we go. Because I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell a single soul. I told my senior partner out of respect, and I told my health system because I wanted everything on the level, right? But otherwise than that, I wasn't self-promoting here. I was just here. So they all know. They think it's neat. Some people will ask me not a thing. They like, it's normal. We've never talked about it. Like, don't ask, don't tell. And some people are like, it's very, very cool. I find that I get more community in this from docs that I don't know, like other OBGYNs that want to reach out and do posts together or live or whatever. And that's super fun because I'm doing that with doctors all over the place. It's kind of like this unique little niche. Coworkers will say some things. The nurses are love it. My patients will be like, girl, I saw you. I was like, I was in my other room and I heard your voice. And I was like, she's not in my house. And then it's funny because they're like, my sister was watching you. And then I realized that's my doctor. And that's really, it's just funny. You know, these are funny things.
That's very cool.
My daughter and I were in, makeup store, and somebody went up to her, and my daughter's 13. Can you imagine? And she knows what I'm doing here. Yeah. And somebody went up to her and was like, "Is your mom the vag doc?"
You're famous. You're getting famous.
Yeah, she could not have been more, like, my children are so proud.
Oh, that's great.
I was waiting for you to say that too. Oh, that's so great.
My dad knows more women's health as an almost 80-year-old man than he ever knew about any health in his entire life. So it's just, it's great. You know, he laughs, he learns, and he's like, I don't know how you talk about that. I'm like, this is what I do every day in an office. It's just, I did it with a phone in front of me.
Yeah.
I'll be really curious to see how long it takes before you're asked to speak, you know, a bigger platform at meetings and congresses about this, because I think more professionals and physicians and doctors and nurses and PT are kind of arriving at the same conclusions that you are, that there is a medium and a need, a desire, an audience for this kind of information and these types of engagements. And for those who are interested in building their own brands, And I'm not saying that as a narcissistic angle, but building their own brands because they have committed, like you have, you love women, you love OBGYN and all of the science, and you are committed to sharing it. That's what you want. Yeah. You want to spread information and combat misinformation. I put my money on it. When we look back in history, these first couple of years, though, will be really interesting because you are one of the first to come out there in this specifically women's health. I know there are others like that, but just talking to you, and I think that you really are creating a new model for patient-physician dynamics.
You know what? I hope that more healthcare enters this because there's a lot of areas I would like more information in.
Yeah.
I have lots of friends in lots of fields, but they're in the offices busy. Sometimes I'm like, I don't want to bother them. When I feel the same way as a friend of a physician, as a lot of people feel as patients of physicians. So I hope a lot more people jump in. Yeah. And I really will say that the creators that I am following, I am enjoying so much. And I feel this kinship and this friendship at a distance, which is lovely. And I think that even though we have communicated a little bit in this realm, those people and I think that that's how all these other people feel. Like they've communicated with me in some way.
Yeah.
And maybe I've responded to them and maybe we've had a little chit chat in the comments and it feels real and valid and like somebody's being heard, which is always a beautiful thing. And then it just goes back to building more and more trust and just keeping it authentically on the level and hopefully practicing good medicine, which is really confusing in the world that we live in.
Well, Dr. C, thank you so much for your willingness to show up, speak plainly, and raise the bar for how women get their health information and how they share it. You are a wonderful, just wonderful person. I really enjoyed meeting you and talking to you about all of this.
Well, thanks, I appreciate you guys having me. This was a lot of fun talking about how I talk as opposed to, you know, me doing a bunch of research coming in and talking about vaginas all day. So this was wonderful. And anything that forwards women's health in the conversation and what helps women. So all good.
We really appreciate you making the time. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Take care. This has been Two Uteruses Walk Into a Bar, a perimenopausative podcast powered by Grey Matter Agency. Find us wherever you like to find your podcasts and on YouTube.